thing. The breathing is a thing that happens.
Okay.
So somebody's got to say something impromptu.
Yeah. This is the impromptu part. This is where we
got to find something to introduce the episode with.
Introduction, clever segue.
So if it's clever, I'm out. So.
Well, I mean, we have guests today, so you know, LaShonda is here officially. Are you here officially or no?
No.
Okay, you're not. Okay, all right.
We were just flies.
Today. Okay. All right. We got the diversified tea co-chairs here, so they are not flies. They are our leaders.
No.
Our fearless leaders. Yeah. Well, we have both.
Fans.
We have one who is officially here on the record. The other one who's in witness protection. So yeah.
I didn't do the homework.
Oh, you true. Well, okay.
Homework.
It's
Are we
all right.
Supposed to do homework?
Well, the beauty of this is I feel like even if you have not done the homework, the conversation is rich enough to where, you know, you'll That's still true. Be able to that contribute, hop it, and you know, you can still be cut out at any time.
That's
just
diversified
let me know.
IT.
That's right. That's it. We're trying to make it accessible to all the people.
We got it then.
We
can
got
handle
it.
That.
So I assume there's enough banter there, I think, for me to pull something from.
Find something. That's
I will. It's going to be profound. It's going to be great.
The audacity of this pitch. The audacity of this pitch has been brought to you by Diversify IT.
Hello, it's Brandon. This week we went over time for Audacity of this pitch. The conversation was so good with the Diversify IT co-chairs that we ended up going a little bit over an hour. So we split the episode up into two sections, and we hope that you enjoy. The following is part one. Episode 001. The first episode was zero, was nothing. It was 000.
We it was just, not nothing. It well, definitely it was not. It was awesome.
Yeah. It was something.
Something out of nothing.
It was, exactly. So that's why I labeled it 000. So this one is the first episode where we're actually going to like go into the meat of what we are and what we're doing. And so the first song, well, first of all, LaShonda, as co-chair of Diversify IT, talk to me a bit about what this podcast means to you.
What it means to me. So I, when I heard about this podcast, was excited about another avenue to have a conversation. Something else that brings us together, something else that we may have in common, but we don't know we have in common, or something that we can learn about each other. So, for me, Diversify IT is a space where IT professionals are networking, learning about each other, having the ability to bring them their whole selves to the space with no judgment, all about learning and all about growing. And so out of Diversify IT sometimes sprouts these little flowers, these patches of gifts that people bring out, which the podcast was. It's not necessarily a Diversify IT scope item. Like we said, we only do 1, 2, and 3, right? But this podcast is another way to bring people together to talk about something that makes them who they are in their IT roles.
Can I jump in there?
Yes.
Because what makes me think and get excited about the podcast and what you've made me think of is that the podcast format itself just gives people permission to sit with it in their own time, in their own space, where they are willing and comfortable to have some internal reflection, which is so necessary to the things we talk about in our workplace, and just to say it's okay to have multiple options to enter the conversation. This is just one more fantastic way to do it in your own time, in your own space, in a really neat way.
Hadn't thought about that.
See.
That probably was not even what y'all were thinking about.
It's not, but no, because the first song is The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. So if this is a revolutionary way of thinking, there's got to be a revolutionary process of consumption. And so being able to, like, you know, listen to it while you're at the supermarket shopping on your iPhone. That's
while you're coding.
Coding that too. Or spending time with your family in the car on a summer trip. However you take this in, you can grow and change.
One of the beauties now is you can just go and find it on a streaming service. Because I remember talking to my kids about back in the day, I'd have to go to the record store on Tuesdays and go flipping through probably either albums or CDs. But now, Laura, you had mentioned this earlier, listening to the various songs we talked about made you think about other songs. And one of the ones we're going to talk about today, somehow I've not ever listened to. So I'm excited just to hear new music and introduce some relatively obscure stuff that I like that others might enjoy too. So
I mean, that being said, like, the first song, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. Just want to read a couple lines from the song, Gil Scott Heron. You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in four parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised.
So the importance of reaching people wherever they are, however they are, is the basis of what we're doing here. But then, whenever we reach them, what are we doing? What are we saying? Is anybody listening to what we have to say? So today's topic was songs that bring a call to action. Right? So when we get there with the message, we're trying to get people to do something. All right? So all of our subjects today are trying to motivate action or trying to prompt action in some shape, form, or fashion. But then also, we aren't just talking about the action that they're trying to call attention to, but some of the obstacles in regard to how we approach or engage with those artists as they are giving us those calls to action. How is the messenger received in the message that they're trying to give?
Right, especially nowadays, what you would think with all the political angst and turmoil that we'd have more protest songs out there that we could find. But unlike the 60s, especially when, you know, some of the most famous artists to come out of that time period were singing protest songs and almost defined your greatness by your willingness to do so. It's more of a risk now, it seems to be, because there are fewer and fewer artists who are out there singing these types of songs, even though it's easier than ever to put music out now because of, you know, self-publishing and everything else. So.
And that's interesting to me that we have more tools than we've ever had before in regard to engaging and interacting with people, but we have a dilution, or in some cases, not even a lack of a message at all in regard to, you know, activism, in regard to engaging individuals across different cultural barriers, socioeconomic barriers. But yeah, like, that's what it was about. It was about reaching across the aisle. And we talked about that. We talk about that in your first selection, The Dangerous Ones.
Yep.
Right? So talk to me about Casey.
All right. So this song's interesting because we talked at the end of our first episode about, you know, we're not musical historians or experts on this. So it's interesting that I actually got this one wrong. I was out for a run during COVID, and my streaming service picked this as something that I might like, and I'm listening to it and totally got into it. And I'm like, man, I can't believe he's put out this song right in the middle of everything going on with Trump and COVID and the election. So the lyrics that I want to focus on, I'll read because it's got my favorite four-letter word in it. Or not four-letter, four-syllable. Hey, there's a word for last winter. It's something worse than discontent. So I took that as, you know, COVID and especially what we had all gone through. 37 euros and staying out of trouble ain't enough to make my rent. And Brandon, I know you'll want to talk about that line right there. So let it burn, let the motherfucker burn. It's election day. They shut the water off last week. I guess it's going to burn either way.
If there's a word for last winter, it's something worse than discontent. I'm 37 years old and staying out of trouble ain't enough to make my rent. So let it burn, let it burn, let the motherfucker burn. It's election day. They shut the water off last week. I guess it's gonna burn either way. They'll ship the bodies back down with the cocaine and guns. These white boys with money make the whole world run. Let the wall hit your back, the blood hit your tongue. Cause you and me, brother, we're the dangerous ones. You and me, brother, we're the dangerous ones.
So I'm out on a run, thinking this is all about what's going on. You know, we got the January 6th hearings going on and the 2020 election. But actually, the song was written, I think, back in, or at least recorded back in 2018. So wasn't even referencing that, but it was still referencing Trump. So, but this one, there's a line in here, actually subtitled this part. It held on to it. This struck me both for work and for what we're doing at Diversify IT. It's stop looking for a way out, start looking for a way through. So I'm the constant compromiser, always looking for a way around, making everybody happy. And when I heard that line, it just stuck with me. And I must have listened to this song like 20 times, both, you know, for the political message going on and for that personal message that I got from it, that I have to stop. You know, everyone, it's fine to be a compromiser. You know, in our business, you got to get people on the same page, working towards the same goal, and sometimes that requires some level of compromise. But I go back to some things that I've said before. I sort of have that luxury of compromising. Folks not in the same situation I am don't always, and so when you're fighting against uneven odds, you don't always have the option to compromise. So that was what stuck with me. Any song that has a curse word in it also works for me. So that one, you know.
It's color.
Can I just jump in real
quick? Of course.
Go ahead. I always find that these types of songs force listeners. So you didn't even mean to hear this song, but it says, You need to hear this. You need to listen. You need to do something about what you're now hearing. And what I just heard you say is you went back and researched, and then you said, wait a second, let me do a self-assessment because I wasn't even looking for this. I found it. Now I'm responsible for what I heard. And this protest music that we hear is not just about the beat. It's not just about, you know, what made us move. It's about what's making the move. It's about the movement, right? Mm-hmm. And so going back to Gil Scott-Heron, he's always been like in the background, in the soundtrack of my life, because it's something that, I don't know if it's the movies I watched or just, you know, my family and where we were, but it's always a reminder when I hear protest music that there is more going on than what you got going on, right? There's more to life. There's somebody is doing worse than you are. and you need to pay attention. And if you can, you need to try to change it. You need to try to fix it. So it is a call to action. At the same time, it's a call to listen.
Mm-hmm. That's a great point. And I think what's interesting about this song and this artist, because I must have chosen one of his songs previously in one of my playlists, and they're very, like you talk about the beat, songs rock. I mean, he's got some more mellow ones, but I know he's got one called Torn Apart. It says some great lines, just a really rocking song. But this one, like you said, it stuck with me. I was like, what other stuff does he have like this? And I went back. Mm-hmm. And it got to that point I talked about where we can now self-publish. I was thinking, man, this came out so timely. How did he get this out so quick? Mm-hmm. But again, it wasn't specifically referring to that. But there are some other lines that I think raise some interesting questions for us, you know, between the message of the artist and the artist themselves. So throughout this, and there's actually a really cool video encouraging folks to vote that uses his song, but it's, you know, they're going to stack up the dead till they block out the sun. These white boys with money make the whole world run. And the dangerous ones refers to he and anyone who stands up to those white boys with money are the more dangerous ones. We gotta fight against them, even though he's quite a country artist, but he's certainly a very white, Southern rock type of artist. So what does that make you think about?
For me, when I heard it, I took it as basically him embracing the moniker, right? Like, you know, whenever you're dealing with forces that are more powerful, they create these labels and they assign these labels to individuals, you know, that they want their constituency to view as the enemy, right? So Casey is looking at this moniker of being dangerous or subversive, you know, and saying, yeah, that's what I am. I'm supposed to be dangerous to these particular situations, these particular entities that don't want the best for me. So by embracing this label, you know, I own it. They aren't telling me who I am. I'm saying this is what I represent. This is what I stand for. I am challenging the system, and it's okay for me to do so. And by doing so, encouraging others to do the same. That's right. How I took it.
Yep, that's how I took it too. And I took him as even more dangerous. You know, I'd done a lot of study of the history of country music and sort of that idea of authentic. Mm-hmm. And, Johnny Cash was always seen as very authentic. He didn't talk. I mean, he recorded Folsom Prison and stuff like that. He spent time in prison. Mm-hmm. I think it was Merle Haggard who talked a lot about it, who actually had not spent time in prison. So that idea of, the bad boy image, and mm-hmm. Casey Anderson for sure has that bad boy image, because I know he came out of jail. He's also struggled with some mental health issues, which is neither here nor there. But I took this song as his redemption song. I don't think I really realized what he was redeeming himself from, because mm-hmm. I assumed it was some sort of, I don't know why, some sort of blue-collar criminal. Mm-hmm. When in fact it was the epitome of a white collar criminal. And actually Brandon out-researched me on this one, did a little more research than I did.
And the thing was, I mean, I go down these rabbit holes because, like, you introduced me to stuff that I haven't heard before, just like, you know, I'm doing for you and everything. So I was like, you know, I first heard him, I was like, this dude sounds like Bruce Springsteen. I was like, I wonder if anybody else has made that comparison. And so I plugged them both into Google, and what came back was an article where he had, you know, basically sold this false bill of goods to people saying that he was going to run this charity concert and Bruce Springsteen was going to be there. And I was like, whoa, this dude. And there was an interesting question that came out of it. It was like, you know, okay, well, you know, are we platforming this guy? Because he was convicted for it. He went and he actually did, I think it was like 4 years, yeah, three, four years, something, yeah. something for, yeah. for wire fraud, for basically lying about this concert, this benefit concert that never came to be. And then he blamed his, like, mental illness, you know, on the fraud itself or whatever. And I had some conflicting feelings about that. But what stuck with me was the fact that, and I've had the same conversation, ironically, when it comes to R. Kelly, or when it comes to listening to Bill Cosby tapes or whatever. Yeah. Like, is there a way to separate the artist? I mean, it doesn't take away his background, doesn't take away from the validity of the message in this song, right? And is there a way to separate the artist from the art when it comes to, you know, political messaging? Like, you know, you can talk about what was done by Sly and the Family Stone, or, you know, what drug use may have happened, or, you know, the infidelity of Martin Luther King or whatever, but the message is bigger than the messenger, right?
Right. Yeah, and I think in this one, I truly do see it as a bit of a redemption song, fighting back against, like you said, that those powers that be.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting you bring that up. A buddy of mine, we've been making mixtapes for 30 years since college, and we've been going back at it again recently. And you know, someone I listened to most of my life, Ryan Adams, very much got caught up in the Me Too movement, and mm-hmm. we've sort of done this unwritten rule, not including any of his songs. I mean, so again, you know, what's the line you draw? I've not seen anything from Ryan Adams making me think that he's necessarily remorseful about this.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't read enough interviews. Obviously, you did more research than I did about Casey Anderson. But for me, this song stuck with me, going back to what LaShonda said. It found me.
Mm-hmm.
That line about, you know, looking for a way through.
Mm-hmm.
When I sit there and I'm about to compromise, either, you know, whether it be at work or otherwise, and even thinking about joining this podcast, I think that was it. It's time to stop looking for a way out.
I hear you. And that, I mean, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier in regard to him embracing the moniker of, you know, being dangerous. I feel like oftentimes whenever you're addressing these entities, these forces, you know, that you're up against when you're making profound political speech, there is a purity test that comes into play. Like, you know, for some reason we can't listen to this individual here because, you know, they have this drug record, or they have, you know, infidelity and, you know, in their background, or some other detracting quality or characteristic that gets amplified and is used to control, you know, the platform, use to control the speaking area altogether. When you're speaking about good, whenever you're fighting for good, when you're fighting for what's right, obviously you're going to have those people who are in opposition to you saying, you know, you're not good enough, you're not smart enough, you don't look the part, you don't speak the part, you're not the right gender, you're not the right sexual orientation. These are the issues that we face whenever we're trying to establish our authority in regard to what's right.
Right.
Right. But whenever those people who are speaking against us, so, I mean, just think about your Donald Trump. Like, I mean, like, he can lie all day long. No consequences. As a matter of fact, that can increase your profile.
Yep.
And so standing in truth, standing in what's right, obviously requires a certain transparency and an embracing of who you are, mistakes and all. And so as we receive one another, as we interact with one another, you know, in on this journey toward equity, inclusion, we have to look at one another and say, okay, I'm a flawed human being. This is a flawed human being. I accept this person for who they are and how they are. And more importantly, I accept the message and the reason why we're here.
And it's often, I think, a sense of fear to get more involved. I mean, you talk about Martin Luther King and how the FBI had mm-hmm. tapped his phones and mm-hmm. Planted spies within his mm-hmm. circle of trust, and using all that information either against him or threatening to use it against him or mm-hmm. his allies. And, of course, he battled through until he was assassinated. But, you know, that's one of the things I got to, you know, and again, I know this isn't all about me, but, you know, you think about all you have and all you have to give up sometimes for these fights.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
you got to hit that tipping point where you're willing to do something about it.
And you got to wake up and fight.
Exactly.
So,
nice segue.
So, yeah. So you chose Matthew Grimm. Woody Guthrie's 33rd Resolution. Break it down.
Absolutely. So Matthew Grimm's one of my very favorites. He's in a band, I think, back in the 80s or 90s called the Hangdogs. A little bit Southern rock. I think he's out of Iowa, but they were in New York for a time. Band didn't make much of a wave, and he started going solo. Hasn't had much of a popular career at all, but what has defined his career has been his willingness to be in your face politically. Mm-hmm. He had a backing band called Matthew Grimm and the Red Smear, and he had a website called that. A lot of political writings. So he's really inspired me over the years with how much he's willing to get out there. I don't know if he'd ever be overly popular. I feel like he's had some really popular or really catchy type songs, so I know he can write a good song. But this one is always stood out for me because, as you said when we first started, and I didn't realize a lot about Woody Guthrie. I've always, again, same thing, level of respect for all he's done. His old recordings are kind of hard to listen to, not always the greatest voice in the world. But Matthew Grimm did this song called Woody Guthrie's 33rd Resolution. So as he sings through and talks about the tough times, he cites various resolutions, some as simple as, you know, read lots of good books, which apparently was number 13, shave, which was number 4. But the one that really struck me is the, you know, going back to what we're going to talk about a little bit, or going forward to what we're going to talk about a little bit, number 27 is beat the fascists. Mm-hmm. 32, make up your mind. 31, love everybody. And number 33, wake up and fight. Work more and better. Number 8, write a song today. 13, read lots of good books. Number 4, shame. 19, keep hoping machine running. 32, make up your mind. 31, love everybody. Number 33, wake up and fight. In the way that he just delivers that simple little phrase just also reminds me of, correct me if I'm wrong, is it not the end of Do the Right Thing, where mm-hmm. it's mm-hmm. You know, wake up. So just one of those commands that, I mean, just I look around at people these days and I'm like, just wake up, people. Mm-hmm. Do you not realize what's going on? And very frustrated with where we are. Politically, culturally, everything else. I've been doing a lot of traveling for my family and going to different parts of the country, and it's not encouraging me anymore than it is here. But this song caps it off for me. He's also has the willingness to sing about some forgotten heroes. Henry Wallace is a very famous left-wing icon, FDR's first vice president, and if had things not worked out the way they would, he would have been president when FDR passed. I think a lot of people have done, you know, alternate histories of what could have happened if Henry Wallace had ascended to that role. But this one pays homage to, you know, the classic protest era, Woody Guthrie and those inspired in the 60s by him. Don't have a lot of people who are so explicitly inspired by Guthrie other than what we're going to talk about in a few minutes.
Yeah, I mean, this song, I mean, Woody Guthrie in particular, when he was speaking about, I mean, when he was singing about fascism, it seemed more so like, well, the political environment was different. Like, it was obvious that fascism was over in World War II Germany, right? So everybody knew what a Nazi was. Everybody knew what, you know, what we were up against. We were united as a country, you know, against one common enemy. And so in that space, there's a certain amount of unity that comes naturally from fighting one entity. Contrary to what you're experiencing as you're traveling around the country, where it's like, no one seems to know who the enemy is, right? And so going back to why we have the division right now, or why we have the hesitance, you know, among contemporary artists to start singing, I feel that's a big key. It's like people don't understand, or people don't know who we're supposed to be unifying against. We have all these labels that are assigned to people, you know, communist, socialist, you know, anti-fascist, Republican, Democrat, liberal. Like, we have all these different labels, but we don't have a consensus as a country in regard to who the enemy is, because we have people within the country telling us we're each other's enemies.
Right. Yeah. This is sometimes when I feel elitist, having worked in a university for so long and, you know, fairly well educated, and this makes me wonder, you know, how to reach those other folks. And I don't have the answer to that, and I'm not sure how many are going to appreciate this podcast.
LaShonda, solve the problem. Solve the problem right now.
Yeah,
right
solve
now.
The problem
right now, LaShonda, do it.
I can do it right now.
You can do it too, Laura.
30 seconds or less. So you did mention the wake up call, and at the end of Do the Right Thing, there was a scream, wake up, right?
Yep.
I wonder if it's a shake. I wonder if it's a touch or a tap or a sprinkle. Like, I'm thinking about when your mom was in a good mood and she woke you up, versus when you were already late and she's already called you and you've ignored her, and she came in there and, you know, shook you out of the bed, knocked you over, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes there's a gentle shake. And that gentle shake is the compassion piece that we sometimes miss. When we're wanting people to, we're like, I've been over here starving for years. I've been sitting on the same corner for years. You've passed me by every day. I don't have the gentle shake in me anymore. Right now, I'm ready to jump up and shake you, but not gently, right? But sometimes people need to say, hey, Chris, you've known me for a while. Did you know that this is what I'm going through? Did you know that we are sitting right here in front of people who are struggling? And because we have a connection, because we have compassion for each other, you'll listen to me and you'll pull yourself out of your slumber without me having to, you know, bully you or threaten you or make you feel bad. It's just a question. And and the gentleness that we are missing sometimes when we're making everybody our enemy is that, yes, we're all flawed. We're all flawed. Doesn't matter what class we're in, doesn't matter how educated we are, what our label is, we are all flawed. But once we say we are going to commit to allowing you to be a flawed person in front of us, who's also flawed, then we can hear each other better.
I mean, that's a great point. I mean, I want you to join our next podcast, because I was thinking of another artist that I'm trying to think about how we're going to, I won't get into that, but yeah, and I think that's the part. I mean, I know I'm flawed to the point where I won't even listen to most discussions on politics these days. It just angers me so much. So ironically, I find that I'm just as intolerant as the people that I'm frustrated with. So how do I come out of that? And I like to think I'm, you know, as empathetic of a person as I can be, but I don't know, something to think about. Thank you.
Can I jump in about listening? I mean, I hate to state the obvious, but I think music can give us some inspiration here, in the sense that when we're talking about being able to connect and maybe motivate, maybe that's a second level, third level goal, but we're trying to be in touch with people that feel distant or out of touch or maybe even hurtful. Music says we don't have to do it one way, and we're going to use different feelings and vibes, and I'm not just thinking physically how the music is presented, that music is a whole other thing. It's not just the words. It's an experience that you get in touch with only because it exists as it does. So how are we being open to more ways than one to listening? How are we listening in a complex way, not just one direct way? How are we accepting for ourselves people can say things different than I was expecting and I can still hear what they're saying? Music does that. I think that's why we read the lyrics and we think one thing and then we listen to it and we feel and we do different things.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, what inspired this whole podcast. It's like thinking about the Casey Anderson song again, you know, the 40 or 50 lines. I doubt that the one that he thought was most important to me was to, you know, stop looking for a way out the way through. So just one or two lines in a song can really connect with someone and maybe start making them think in a different way. So ultimately it comes back to why we did this, because I don't know how else I might be able to reach some folks. And whether it's just through finding out a good artist that they haven't heard of before, which may segue into our next song.
Yeah, no, I mean, it consolidates, right? Like, it allows us to, I mean, we're all hearing the same notes, but even though we're listening to the same songs, different things are jumping out, you know, at all of us, but we're all being unified by this one, by this communal experience of listening to this song.
The audacity of this pitch.
The conversation does not have to stop here. Join us on diversifyit.duke.edu and join our listserv.